This goes way beyond the basics and way beyond browser-based apps. No other platform has anything close to this depth, breadth, or quality of apps for learning. You know, we love hearing from teachers. They're the ones in the classrooms day in and day out, stoking the imaginations of their students. They've seen firsthand the way their students are more engaged, more creative, and ultimately more successful when they're working with iPad.
Okay, so we had an Apple event this past Tuesday. Last week we talked about, I pretty much ranted about what I think Apple is not going to do. And guess what? Apple didn't do it.
You know, and the one magical unicorn that I wanted them to do, they didn't do either.
No, it's not going to happen. But the one thing that I kind of want to start talking about is mainly some of the statements that Apple actually said on stage. One of the executives that got up there, I think his name is Jaws or something. One of the things that he said, the first thing that he said is really two things kind of stood out to me. The first thing he said is when they were talking about the iPad, how the iPad goes farther than the basics. And this is what he said, basics. And I'll actually throw these quotes in the recording, so our listeners will actually be able to hear it if they're kind of like us and didn't actually watch the show, but just kind of caught live blogs and stuff. But he said that the iPad goes beyond the basics and is more than just browser-based apps. And then he came back a few minutes later and he said that teachers are telling him that students are more successful when they have an iPad. And what I want to know is, what are they basing those statements on?
And that's just one of those things. I hear the statement and I'm like, oh my gosh, if y'all could see how far my eyes rolled back in my head when I heard it just then, even. It's like, come on.
I just really want to know, like, what, I mean, even if teachers are saying that students are more successful if kids have an iPad, I want to know, like, what are they more successful? Is this kid with an iPad more successful than a kid with an Etch-a-Sketch, a kid with a Chromebook, a kid with nothing, with no device? I just want to know. If it's a kid with no device, then yes, the kid is more successful.
And they have to be comparing it against that, because otherwise it would be slander on anything else. It has to be then with someone with no device. And I'll give them that all day.
Yeah, I mean, even then that statement may not necessarily be true. I mean, you and I mean, not to kind of share our age or anything, but I mean, we're old and we went through school and we didn't have one-to-one devices and we did just fine. I mean,
yes. And for those wanting a reference of how old, my AutoCAD in high school was on an Amber CRT.
So, I mean, I did mention before that we had like Apple IIe's playing Super Bunny when I was in like fifth grade. So, I mean, that kind of says how old I am, or just how old the technology was when I was in school. So, but even then, it's like, and they have this event, and then I watch a TV show. I watch a lot of TV and watch a lot of movies, and I wanted to tweet this, but I was watching this show, and it was like, it was a high school show. I mean, it was about a high school teacher or whatever, he was from college or whatever. He got thrown in this biology teaching job that he didn't really want, but I'm just looking in this classroom that this show is based on, and there's like no technology in the classroom. I mean, the dude literally still has like a chalkboard or a whiteboard. And then I was watching this other show, and it's the same way. I mean, so...
And to be quite honest, in the class that I teach, and I teach a technology class, I use the whiteboard a lot because it's better than me waving my arms trying to describe it.
I mean, I just want to know is, like, does having a device in a student's hand really make a student more successful than, say, a student that doesn't have access to a device? Because what it boils down to, and this is what my main complaint is, I was really hoping that Apple was going to lower the cost of the iPad considerably to compete more with the Chromebook, but it seems more like the fact that Apple kind of dug its heels in and it's been like, look, this is how much our device costs. If you don't want it, if you can't afford it, we're sorry. I mean, and so it's almost like Apple I think it's indirectly doing this thing that it's trying to say that it's not doing, trying to make learning and stuff more accessible to everybody, but in a way not pricing their products in a way that is accessible to everybody.
And I agree with that. I mean, now one of the things, like you said, to help learning, I really do think the technology devices help those kids that aren't necessarily learning the way the instructor's teaching, you know, because we have our auditory, we have our visual, we have our doers, and having a device there lets them have other means to absorb the content besides how the instructor's giving it.
I mean, I'll agree to that. I'm one of those kids that I didn't ever really do my homework that well or that much because, and I still do.
At all.
I did, well, yeah. Or if I did homework or if it was required to do it, I actually did it in the class period before the homework was actually due. No, don't copy those if you're a student listening or tell any of my former teachers, one of which works at my district, that I did that in their class. But but I would hear a teacher teach, and that was pretty much – I was good enough for me. I was able to pass tests and absorb information that way. And so I get that there's different ways of learning these days. But, I mean, I just have a real – I mean, as much as I like Apple and as much as I am a fanboy, whether I want to admit it or not, I don't like them making those broad general statements like that because what proof do they really have? I mean, my students are really successful with a Chromebook.
Yeah, I mean, they are very broad-brushed statements, and never are those kind of statements accurate. And they know that, but it sounds good at an Apple presentation.
That it does, and it's like it makes people cheer and hoop and holler, and most of them are Apple employees that do. But but
and
yeah.
We also need to remember, who was watching this?
Actually, I mean, just press were the only ones there. They didn't live stream it, so I mean... And it's just Apple. A lot of most of the people that care about these kind of events are people that care a lot more about Apple than anything else. So, I mean,
now I agree with a lot of the stuff that they do. And well, I won't do it now because we'll get into the details of some of the stuff that they did in a minute. But I like some of the changes they've done.
I mean, yeah, I really do. Some are great. I just wish that they could have hit. I mean, they've got a perfect opportunity with the iPad Mini to create a device to bring it down to a lower price point. I mean, I don't think there's any reason why they couldn't sell an iPad Mini for $150.
I don't think they even want to sell that device, to be quite honest.
But I mean, it would be perfect. I mean, it would be perfect for school kids. I mean, especially like elementary, to have like an iPad Mini. I could tell you that I watch these smaller kids in like pre-K and kindergarten use these big old iPads, these 9.7-inch iPads, and I'm thinking, their little hands, they might do better with an iPad Mini. I mean, to be completely honest with you.
You should give them one of the iPad 1s to see if they can even pick it up.
I have one. I might ought to. I still have an iPad 2 in use, so if that says anything.
You know, I think the iPad Mini, you're right, though. The iPad Mini could be that perfect device, and they could get it at a price point where they could include something like a kickstand keyboard.
But to take it even further, somebody put on Twitter that said that there's like an estimate of like 14 million high school students or something like that across the country. And they even said that like it would cost Apple like $4 billion for them to pay to put an iPad in the hand of every high school student. $4 billion.
They could do that easily.
That is a drop in the bucket to Apple.
Now, one of the things I think would be really cool, and they wouldn't even have to lose the money, just sell them at not such a markup.
And that's,
I mean,
and that's
it
the,
is
that's,
education.
Yeah, that was the point I'm trying to get to. It's like Apple can take, I mean, because let's put it this way, the new iPad 9.7 inch that came out last year that they upgraded this year, and we'll talk about the upgrades, which they did do some pretty good upgrades to it. But it starts at $329 if you were to go pick it up at Best Buy today. But for education, we get a whole $30 off. And yes, I know if we were to buy maybe like 1,000 of them, they may knock a little bit more price off of that. But it's not going to be that much. And so, I mean, I don't see
the most I've ever seen them knock off is $10.
I mean, they're knocking $30 off on this one, and that's it. And most of that's probably just tax when you think about it.
They're using it as a write-off.
Well, 60 if you count they're knocking tax off too, since we don't have to pay tax on it. So they're knocking, it takes it from 330 to 300. So if like you were to buy it, Best Buy, it costs you about 360 after tax. But, and so they're knocking $60 off of it after tax. But still, I mean, there's no reason why they can't they can't knock it down even farther to like $150-$200. I mean, I would have been fine if they would not. I think if they would have priced it at $200 for education, I think that would have been a good price.
And you know what? I would have tweeted out Bravo Apple
because that would have been, they would have done that. That okay. I mean, that would have been a good price. That is Chromebook competition right there when it comes to price. Now, granted, for some things, it's like you have to think in the price of another keyboard and stuff like that. But, I mean, when you're talking about an iPad, okay, so we do, if you have a bunch of iPads, you do like what we talked about doing for mice and keyboards when it comes to testing with Chromebooks. You just have a bunch of USB ones or a bunch of Lightning things in a box. Available for students to use. So if a kid wants to use a keyboard, they can go pick up a keyboard and use it for whatever.
I do have a question. When did that started working?
The what?
Because I have the USB keyboards, because I have an iPad 2 on my desk that someone broke the digitizer on, and I'm trying to get their pictures that are only on this iPad. And I plug in the USB adapter, an official Apple USB adapter, you know, to plug in USB accessories.
Mm-hmm.
And I plug in a keyboard, and it says, this device is not supported.
You may have to get, like, the old keyboard dock that was created with the app with the first iPad. You know, the one where it would use it in portrait mode and give it a keyboard and has a 30-pin?
Yeah, that's scary.
So you might have to do that. But even then, I hear mixed results about keyboards actually working with the USB adapter.
Honest, I ordered a new digitizer, and I'm going to... It was supposed to be delivered today, but guess what? They didn't deliver today.
Yeah, go figure. And that probably only cost you, what, $20?
$15.
So it's not too bad.
And it came with the tools.
Hey, even better. That's something that we could do. It's like we could buy a box full of keyboards and have them on hand because we can buy keyboards for cheaper as long as they're not like Apple branded and not the Bluetooth and stuff like that. And have those available. So, I mean, a $200 iPad, that is, I mean, the stuff that they announced, I mean, that would be a lot. The way I've looked at iPads, it's like iPads I find better for like lower elementary grades, like tablets and stuff. You use like Android tablets, I think Nexus or something like that.
I have some Nexus and, well, Google quit making the Nexus tablets. So I have some other ones that are basically the same thing as the Nexus.
And so those are basically for like elementary age kids.
Correct.
And so you kind of do the same thing with me. You're just using Google products. But tablets seem to work better for younger age kids. But because of like the curriculum we have to do in Texas and stuff, it seems like Chromebooks are better for high school age students. But also that is, it's a price point too. Because you can get away with buying 5 iPads or 5 tablets for one classroom to share, because they're going to probably put them, because we do like centers is what we do. It's like every classroom has like centers that the kids kind of rotate through. It's like reading, tablet, some blocks, math, stuff like that. And so you don't have to, you know, you're not as concerned about providing a device per kid for elementary aged or and even middle school aged kids. With middle age, we just use or junior high, we just use Chromebook cards too. But I mean, it's because we have to provide one for everyone in the class at one time, and so. But a $200 iPad, that's getting right up there where I can buy a bunch of cards for high school kids to use too. I mean, when you think about it, it's not that much more than a Chromebook.
No, and especially if you're getting the Chromebook at normal prices versus some of these stupid deals we've been getting here lately on. Some of the Lenovo branded ones. I mean, the MSRPs on these Chromebooks are more than that.
Yeah, they're like $267, $300 sometimes. And so, I mean, and that's close to the price of the iPad now, though. I mean, when you think about it, but because we get such crazy, when we can get them for $150,
yeah,
that's sort of like, and I wish price wasn't a consideration, really, but it has to be because, I mean, even if you look at the high school that Apple went to hold this presentation, I mean, it's a public school that acts like a private school. I mean, you literally have to like apply to go to this public school to get into it. And so, I mean, and they were saying there was like IMAX everywhere and parents make big donations every year. And so it's pretty much a private school that's just considered a public school. And so, I mean, but we're not every school is as well to do as schools like that. And then also you hear horror stories like, Los Angeles when they tried to roll out iPads to everybody, and that whole thing just went bad. In fact, they actually, I think, ended up suing Apple to get some of their money back. I mean, because it was so bad. And I think they actually won, too. I think they recovered like $64 million or something like that. I mean, it was a lot of money.
I didn't read about everything that went wrong, but man, that must have been a horrible deployment.
But up until iOS 9.3, I think iPad deployment in schools was terrible anyway. until you could start doing things over the air, like deploying apps and stuff, I think deploying iPads, and that's why you hear about all these successful schools doing it. They're deploying their little small charter schools that have like 100-150 students, so it's not 15, 1700, 1800 like we have that we're trying to roll one-to-one out to. And so,
yeah, that's just not even anywhere close to the same kind of scale of problems that you'll run into.
But back to that statement that they made that it goes beyond the basics and it's more than just browser-based apps. I mean, do they not know that Chromebooks can now run Android apps?
Well, I mean, they run them really well, and they're about to run full Linux apps, too.
Did they not know that the day before or the day of Acer announced their Chrome OS tablet, which they totally botched that price point?
Oh, man. Someone asked me about a Chrome. Someone actually used these words in an email to me. I need a Chrome tablet. I said, huh, what are the odds? That came out today, but no, I'm not paying that much.
Yeah, that was ace. But, you know, it's a first-to-market product. The price will come down.
It's the whole iPad problem, though. I mean, they price themselves out. Once you get the accessories, you need to make it useful.
Yeah, and so, I mean, so there you go. I mean, if that thing's going to run Android apps, I mean, it's an Android tablet that's running that has the Chrome OS management, which is what I love, is the management, because it's great, it's easy. In fact, we got some new we got those new Chromebooks that we got for the testing or whatever, and for the mock testing last week, and they rolled them out. Well, the first day they were doing mock testing, they didn't use my new Chromebooks, and I'm like, what the heck? I mean, come on, this is what I just hurried up and wired up three carts for you for. Use these Chromebooks. And so the next day they actually used them, and so they came to my office and they were like, we're trying to use them, but the app is not there. And I was like, oh, stupid Matt forgot to push out the app. And so I just went in there 4 seconds later, it was deployed. So, I mean, it's that easy to do things. And so
Did it still give you the message, this may take 24 hours to take effect?
Well, always does. But but I was like, I guess give it about 4 seconds. So, I mean, in fact, I did it. And by the time I walked down to the room that they were doing the mock testing in, which is not the rooms that they did it in the first time, so we didn't deal with the Wi-Fi interference. So that worked great. So I had zero network problems this time around. So basically the rule is no Chromebook testing in those classrooms, because something's going on in there that's just not kosher.
Something is weird.
But by the time I got down there, the students already had the app open and they were using it. So I mean,
well, I mean, and that's a testament to the usability, too.
I mean, it was just that easy. And so, I mean, and if I was to do that on the iPad or whatever, I mean, it's like I'd have to go in the Jamf, I'd have to sign the app to the things, and then depending on how fast they were getting the status updates from Jamf, they would push the apps out, so.
But I say, God forbid, you have to do it on a Windows machine, push out the GPO, wait 60 minutes for it to check in, and then tell them to restart. And, hey, you might get it this time, but if you don't, go ahead and restart again, and then restart again, and then...
Yeah, and it's, in fact, we had that conversation, too, because I had to update the Star app for the high school Windows machines. I think they're only going to have to use one lab this year for testing, so I had to go... I got asked to update that lab because they're going to start practicing next week, and so I went in there and I was just like, well, let me just go manually uninstall it and just manually install it using those tools that we talked about before, and that I wrote a blog post about, and that was just a lot easier than dealing with it with the group policy method. But I can't imagine what it would be like if I didn't have that Impero software that I did all that with. I mean, I just can't imagine having to manually uninstall something. And so, but with the Chromebook app, it just deploys it and it keeps itself up to date, and you just don't worry about it.
Yeah, you make the policy once, and then you keep using it for 6 years to come.
I know, and it's just and don't get me wrong, Jamf will keep the apps updated too. I mean, so that does have that going for it. But I just wonder that Apple's making these statements that it goes beyond browser-based apps. I mean, do they not know how well browser-based apps are getting these days?
I mean, well, I think Apple is talking to their audience because it's an Apple event, and only the Apple people are really going to watch it and give it any credence because, well, I mean, you're an Apple person, and you're criticizing it too. So, I mean, they know what they're doing. They know it runs Android apps.
Yeah, I just don't think they care. They're just they had a message that they were trying to sell, and I mean, don't get me wrong, they sold it well. I mean, in the demos that they did, the ones that I read about, I mean it's all real good tech. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about it. Okay, the iPad, it looks like it got some updated internals. It's a lot faster than last year's model was, and it's got pencil support, which is really cool. I mean, they brought a Pro feature to the regular iPad, and kept it at the same price point. So, I mean, I'll give them kudos for that, but, I mean, you still have to spend $89 to get a pencil if you want a pencil.
I was excited about the other vendor that released.
Oh, the Logitech Crayon?
Yes, oh, dude. Logitech Crayon. I was excited about that because that's half the price.
I know it's $50. It doesn't do, like, pressure sensitivity, but that's okay because the kid just wants to, like, use it to write things. Like, I can say, and I've already asked it because we need to order some new iPads for one of our classes, and I was like, "Hey, can we get the crayon?" He's just like, "Well, how much is that going to cost? Another $100?" I was like, "No, it's actually only $50." And so she's like, "Yeah, well, we can do that." And so I'm excited about that too. So I'm going to get me some crayons. That sounds weird. I'm going to get me some crayons.
Get you a box of crayons.
Give me a box of crayons. And literally, I think it comes in like a 10-pack. So you literally are getting a box of crayons.
Well, you know, I didn't realize it wasn't pressure sensitive, but that is such a fitting name for the product because it didn't matter how hard you pushed on a crayon, it was always going to be that color.
Yeah, and it's like, it's big and blocky and it's childlike and the kids are going to enjoy holding it, and it's got some, it doesn't charge funky like the pencil does, which, I mean, can be an inconvenience because you know that it looks funny, but you know that, like, if you need to charge your pencil, you can just plug it right into your iPad and it'll charge.
Well, at least it doesn't have to play dead like the mouse to charge.
That is still ridiculous. But one of the things that came up is like, well, you have to buy in a 10-pack, and it's not available till June. So, I mean, we have to wait a little bit. I think that's the thing, that you have to buy in a 10-pack.
You know, they should have sold it in 8-packs.
Oh, like regular crayons, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been, and it'd be really, they missed an opportunity there.
It'd be really cool if they, like, worked with Crayola and actually released them in the colors of the actual crayons.
So, oh, that'd be awesome.
But the thing was, one of the questions was, it's doing some weird pairing thing too. It's not using Bluetooth. It's using some like single frequency, and it does not work with the iPad Pro, even though the pencil works with the iPad Pro. So they have worked with Logitech and have built some kind of special technology into this iPad that makes it work.
I wonder if it's using that proprietary audio chip Apple has. You know, they have a proprietary wireless technology for their AirPods.
Yeah, the W1 chip.
Same thing for the. Yeah, I wonder if it's using that same thing for this.
Maybe, but I mean, it's just crazy.
Will you tear one apart for us?
I'm sure I fix it. Will. So.
Oh.
But one of the questions was, okay, so you have like a classroom of these, you have 25 of these iPads out in the classroom, and you have 25 pencils. How do you know who's paired to what? And.
Ooh.
It doesn't matter. You just pick up the crayon and you start writing on the iPad and it just works.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, and so it's pairing with some kind of weird frequency thing, but it's not like normal.
It's definitely short range.
Yeah, it's not like regular Bluetooth pairing. And I think if it doesn't work, I think you just like push the button on the crayon and then like it'll just start working with the iPad. It starts working with whatever iPad is near it.
So now I'm kind of curious, does it even have to pair if there's no pressure sensitivity? Why couldn't they have done something like the Wacom stuff, like on the Note 8, where it's just a passive device, there's nothing in it?
Well, because it's still doing, like, tilt. Like, if you lean, like, if you take the pencil and you write straight up, your line is thin. But if you, like, lean the pencil over, like if you were shading with a pencil, it would actually, like, do pencil shading and stuff. And so... So it does, like, tilt and, like, regular writing, and so...
Well, because I'm curious. I mean, I got my Note because I don't go anywhere without it. I love it. And I have 1024 pressure points on this passive pen. So I'm just kind of curious. not that I'm faulting it. I think it's awesome that they're doing something to bring that to market. I'm just curious. You know me.
I bet the reason
pick it apart and know how it works.
I bet the reason why they did that. I bet that was like some Apple proprietary tech that Logitech couldn't have, and probably to keep that price point at $50 as opposed to $100. I bet it had a lot to do with that. It's like, hey, we gotta. I mean, that and the fact that it's blocky and colorful too probably did it. But I mean, it's just great. And I think it's great that they brought that. I think though, I mean, bringing the pencil to the iPad is good. But me personally, I think that's more like consumer level good, because it's like if you had somebody that was on the fence about buying a new iPad, it's like, hey, this one supports the pencil now and you don't have to buy the iPad Pro. I think like a consumer person might be more apt to buy that. I think that Apple should have brought maybe the smart connector to this new iPad that would be a bit more beneficial to the for education, so that maybe somebody could build a cheaper keyboard that uses the smart connector, because don't get me wrong, I love my iPad Pro 10.5 inch, and I have the pencil and I'm all in on this thing, so I'm over the $1,200 or whatever that it costs for this but I could see the key, and I love having the smart keyboard, and I leave the smart keyboard case on it and always have the pencil with it. Even though I don't use the pencil that much, I find the keyboard actually more useful, even for like doing like the work that I do with it at work, like remoting in the switches and stuff like that. And I just think that that having the smart connector might be more beneficial for education than having the pencil personally.
I agree with that, because for some reason I thought they were including the smart connector on more than just that one now.
No, it's just the Pro.
I mean, that would open the world to all sorts of different accessories you could do over smart connector, because the connector is great.
Yeah, it's just people actually just have to build accessories for the smart connector. I mean, I think there's only like two. There's like keyboards, and somebody built like a charging dock for it, which charging over the smart connector is dreadfully slow. You think Qi charging is slow?
I was just wondering why in the world would they even bother doing that? Isn't it just like pogo pins?
Well, yeah, but yeah, it's magnets and stuff like that. But I mean, it's essentially so you can put your iPad in the stand and watch something, and it keeps it charged while you're doing it. So
does it charge it faster than draining it?
I guess you'd have to like watch a little bit of video and then let it sit overnight and charge it. And so I think it's even slower than Qi charging, to be honest with you.
Oh gosh.
And Qi charging is great, but I think it's slow.
It is slow.
But I can't wait to have it on my next phone, to be honest with you, because when I charge my phone, it's overnight. And so I don't really care if it sits on a pad and has to charge slow all night.
And I have fast wireless charging on this one, but I don't own one of the fast wireless charging adapters, because honestly, I don't care if it takes all night, and the slower you charge it, the better your battery is going to end up being anyway.
Yeah, and so I think that's great. And so, but I just wish more people, I think Logitech was the only one that made a keyboard that uses the smart connector. Everything else, every other keyboard, I think is Bluetooth. And Bluetooth and education, I don't think is a smart idea, because you're going to spend most of your time charging batteries and dealing with pairing issues all day long.
Do you remember Bluetooth at the service center?
Yes, that is exactly what I'm thinking about, where we spent more time changing batteries in the lab because the keyboards weren't working than actually using the labs. So I understand completely why that. In fact, because of that experience, I don't recommend buying wireless keyboards for anywhere.
Yeah, I don't have any wireless keyboards for any of our physical setups. Now, granted, I use them on all of my setups.
Yeah, I use the Apple Magic stuff. So, but speaking of that, I mean, I can buy the Space Gray Magic keyboard and trackpad and mouse now if I wanted to.
Yeah, it won't cost you $4,000 either.
No, but it'll cost you $20 more than the white ones.
Why in the world did they do that?
I don't know, man. That's Apple for you.
Oh, come on.
But that's neither here nor there. But back to the education stuff. I think what they did with the iPad is really great, and I think they added a lot of stuff to it. They threw in the A10 processor in it. My iPad has the A10X, so it's not that much. I mean, it's basically a step better. I mean, the 10.5 will still blow it out of the water when it comes to like some benchmark tests or whatever. But it's the A10 is a good processor for this tablet, and bringing the pencil support and all that other stuff. That's a good price point to keep it at. I mean, for those features, don't get me wrong. I wish it was lower for education, but for even a consumer device, in which I think this is more appealing for that than it is for education personally. Because we still have some iPad Air 2s running around, and they're working great. They're working phenomenal. And they actually have a better screen in them than this iPad. And so, and what's really funny is this iPad is like four times faster than the iPad Air 2, but it's like 40 times faster than the iPad from last year. I don't know. It's almost like
how did that work?
It's because they put those slow guts in that iPad last year to try to bring it down for education pricing. And it's like they changed the screen. The screen on the iPad Air 2 is actually better than the screen on this iPad still too, other than the fact that it doesn't have pencil support. So I mean, but that's neither here nor there, I guess. But the iPad Air 2 still work great, and this new iPad I think is going to work great too. I'm excited about getting some in, and the fact that I'll get another iPad box to put to my collection. So I like the boxes too. It's just weird. But let's talk about some of this software that they updated. iTunes U didn't get really mentioned. iBooks didn't really get mentioned. They updated.
I think iBooks is going to end up going down as an embarrassment.
I mean, there's so much they could do there. I mean,
wait, they did talk about publishing through iBooks, didn't they?
They talked about iBooks Author. They basically killed it, is what they did.
They killed it.
iBooks Author was basically Pages with some book building features, and so what they did was they just updated Pages and put I think it's called like Digital Books. They put a Digital Books feature in Pages, and they updated iWork to support pen support too. You can actually draw in your documents now, your Keynote documents and your Pages documents. You can actually use the pencil to actually draw on those. It's just really cool.
Those are good.
But you can actually design books for iBooks inside of Pages now, instead of having to have iBooks Author on the Mac.
And quite honestly, I thought iBooks Author was a great application.
It was great in concept, other than the fact that it saved only in the iBooks format. It did not save in EPUB, even though iBooks supports EPUB. But the good thing is this new digital books format only saves in EPUB. Yeah, I just find it really weird that you can't open up the iBooks Author files in the new digital books in Pages at all.
And it's very unlike Apple to abandon an older format so quickly.
Yeah, but you can do the interactive features that you could do in iBooks Author in the digital ebooks, even though it's not the same format. I think they're using like an enhanced EPUB or something like that. So they're using a file format too that you can use those interactive features that iBooks would like. That was the selling point of iBooks that they were talking about back in 2012 when the last time we had an education event. So,
man, has it been that long?
Yeah, that's when they were going to revolutionize the textbook industry, and we saw how well that went.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot more PDF textbooks is all I've gotten out of it.
Yeah, but iBooks can open up PDFs. But, yeah, they didn't show really iBooks any love, which I think they need to, like, kill the iBooks name and just call it, like, Apple Books, like they're doing everything else. Apple Podcasts is now, instead of iTunes Podcasts, they just call it Apple Podcasts, and I think they just need to call it Apple Books. But they also didn't really talk about iTunes U, which I think has some real potential there. I was really surprised they didn't. Well, if they'd mentioned it, they didn't mention it enough that I remember it or remember reading about it in a live blog. So I don't really think that they did.
You know, and that's one product I've always been jealous of, because iTunes U had the automated workflow to automatically download all of the assignments and work for students to go home without internet connectivity. And yes, Chromebooks can work without internet, but it's not nearly as cool as iTunes U's functionality.
Well, they kind of took some of those features and they built it into a new thing, which they did come up with ClassKit, the framework for building apps for education use or whatever. And what the ClassKit will actually do was integrate apps into their new schoolwork app that they created. They did do some updates to Classroom. The iPad like thing where teachers can tell an iPad in their classroom what to do, and she can like see the screens of what the kids are doing, and kind of like an iPad monitoring application. They did some updates for app. The one Mac mention was that Classroom will run on the Mac now, and so
that's very good.
The old fogey teachers that don't believe in tablets that still like computers can actually use Classroom to do some things with the iPad. But the cool thing about schoolwork is what they kind of did. It's kind of like, instead of taking the iTunes U and making it more of a Google Classroom competitor, they actually built something new called Schoolwork, where teachers can like assign work and do things like that with this new app called Schoolwork. But the cool thing is that they built this API called ClassKit, where developers can actually build in integration with schoolwork. And so, say, Kahoot can build in ClassKit, using the ClassKit APIs, the teachers can assign a class, a Kahoot quiz, inside of schoolwork, push it out to the students, and I think can even, if the students don't have the app, actually pushes the app out to their iPads just from the schoolwork app too, if I'm not mistaken. And so, like, when the students get to that point in the schoolwork, they'll tap that link or whatever, and it will actually jump straight to the Kahoot app to do whatever the teacher assigned. And so it's like integrating Google Classroom stuff, but integrating, like, third-party apps.
And I think that's really good. And especially if, like, on these web apps like Kahoot, like, directly from the website, you can tie it with your Apple Classroom stuff, so you can assign it directly from Kahoot's page without having to do anything through Classroom.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you'll be able to do that, but I
it'll be coming, because man, if they got the API in there, that's awesome.
So I mean, they are doing some cool stuff with that. They also came out with a new curriculum. They have the Everyone Can Code curriculum that they do, where they use like Swift Playgrounds and stuff like that to try to build like. Basically, they're giving out free computer science class curriculum that schools can use to teach computer science in their classrooms, which. I mean, everyone can code. I mean, I think it's great that students get, like, can see coding, but not everybody can code. I mean, let's just be honest. I mean, sure, they're probably doing it in a way where, like, and if you look at Swift Playgrounds, you start off with, like, hey, you need to move your little monster from this point to this point. And so you say, well, move forward two spots, move right two spots, move forward three spots. Yes, that's programming. But, I mean, that's video game stuff. I mean, that's very simple stuff. But, I mean, it's programming, and you can see, like, the Swift code that they're using to build those sorts of things. But I think it's great that students are, like, being exposed to coding. I don't necessarily think that coding is for everybody, personally. But, I mean, I think it is cool, though, that one of the things that stops schools from doing certain things is the price of stuff. And so Apple's, if you have the ability to get the Apple devices, they basically provide you this computer science curriculum stuff for free. And so I think that's kind of cool. But they created a new curriculum called Everyone Can Create, and it's basically like doing like GarageBand and iMovie and coming up with curriculum for that too. So it's a lot of fine arts stuff is what they're doing. And so I think it's great that Apple's coming up with this curriculum. But being from Texas, we have that phrase that we're not allowed to say that a lot of people in the country use that we don't use. We're not allowed to say Common Core curriculum and stuff like that.
And you so said it.
I said it. And so Texas has certain requirements. And so I just wonder if Apple's curriculum is designed to meet the standards that Texas and other states have.
Well, if we're going to be honest about Texas and the curriculum and whatnot, the only real stipulation is that doesn't have the word Common Core in it. I mean, it's still basically Common Core. It just doesn't have the word.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that too. Just kind of weird that
Texas. Yeah, and 2 plus 2 is always 4 in Texas too.
Yeah, yeah, okay, but yeah. So I mean, it's great that that Apple's building curriculum that makes it a little bit easier to a school to get started at least in a program, and I think that's kind of exciting. In fact, we're doing because we were affected by Hurricane Harvey, we were allowed to do. Donors Choose partnered with Rebuild Texas. Teachers were able to create things in Donors Choose to get projects funded for their classrooms. And we actactually had a teacher that requested like 3 to 4 iPads, and it's our mobile development class, so that she can start doing like Swift Playgrounds in her classroom. And so her project got funded. So she's got some iPads. She's got 3 of them here, and I think one of them's on the way. That she's actually going to work with Swift Playgrounds in her classroom and start using some of that Everyone Can Code curriculum in her classroom. And so I think that's kind of exciting. But the only reason we were able to get those is because other people paid for those iPads and the school didn't actually have to pay for it. But
hey, I think it's awesome that every one of your Donors Choose has got funded. I mean, that's unheard of.
In fact, I think that was like a Donors Choose thing. I think some company came in and basically funded every single project in Texas that was – it was this Rebuild Texas partnership program. So, I mean, it wasn't just us. It was everybody. In fact, I think it broke the Donors Choose website for a day or so. It just couldn't handle it, that much money coming in, I guess. So it's
hey,
really
that's
cool.
Awesome.
It's really cool. I mean, it's more work for me, but I think in the long run it's going to be worth it. because these teachers are going to get some things in their classroom that are useful for the students to be able to do things with. And like we had some math teachers got some Apple TVs and some iPads, and so usually they have to like sit in the back of the classroom where their computers are to work under their document cameras. Well, now they can actually walk around. I set one of them up already. One of them were still waiting on to come in, and I just installed her like the paper app by the company 53, which is basically just like a sketching app. And she's sitting at the front of her classroom doing math assignments where her kids can see it on the screen, and she's not having to be in the back. And so it's just really cool how she's already integrated that stuff in her classroom. She says this is working really well too. So I was a little bit worried about the Apple TV working well, but it's working. It's working good. So I'm kind of excited about that. But
very cool.
But so then now they have two curriculums. Everyone can code and everyone can create. I think they also did some enhancements to their Apple teacher education training stuff that they have, where they have like these training courses where teachers can go in and like take these professional development courses designed by Apple on using like Apple products and Apple technology in their classrooms and different kinds of technologies. And so I think they did some things to that, and they also like gamified it, and so now teachers can like earn gold stars depending on how well they do. I don't understand what the trend is about gamifying everything. Netflix actually tried that with kids. The more you watch, you'd earn a badges, and they think they
realize. Oh my gosh, that is like a horrible concept. The more TV you watch, the more badges you earn.
Yeah, that lasted like 2 days, and then it was gone. So that was just a really bad idea. But I don't. That's a topic for another day about gamifying everything. But yeah, I mean it was an okay event, I guess. I mean there was some, and what kind of got me is we were kind of hoping maybe this would be a great opportunity to announce like a lower price MacBook Air,
the polycarbonate MacBook that we
the
rainbow unicorn.
The only mention that Mac got on the stage was that the classroom app now runs on the Mac. That was literally the only thing, and I think Apple missed an opportunity there. I think there's going to be a lower cost MacBook Air if anything come out eventually, or a new MacBook that's a little bit bigger but comes in at a lower price. I think it's going to come eventually, and I think that an education event would have been a great place for it, to be honest with you, to announce like a lower cost MacBook Air, because schools love the MacBook Air because it's compared to their other laptops. I mean, it's cheap. I mean, and it does basically everything a teacher needs it to do, or a student needs it to do if they're going to deploy MacBook Airs one-to-one. I mean, I only know of one school that ever deployed one-to-one MacBook Airs. I mean, that's expensive. And I think they only did that because they got some kind of a grant for it.
How long did that last?
Oh, I think it was only 1 year or maybe 2 years, but I think they're still using those devices today. And so,
They're great devices. I will give them that. I mean, Apple's hardware is second to nobody. Their build quality, but they're phenomenal. But man,
they want you to pay for it. That's for sure. But I really can't get over kind of what we started with, those blanket statements that they made about that it goes beyond browser based apps, and that students are more successful when they have an iPad. Now, granted, they said it in a way that it wasn't coming from Apple. Teachers were telling him that students are more successful when they have an iPad. I wonder if they're talking about students from that school in Chicago that they were at.
And that's probably the case, since it's coming with a teacher. I mean, they wouldn't know about any other school. So,
but I mean, they didn't call me to ask me if my students were more successful with an iPad or with a Chromebook or anything like that. So,
what would you have told them?
That I think it just depends on the student. I mean, I don't think necessarily it depends on the device they're using. I mean, if it's the student's going to care about how well they're doing, they're going to do well whether they have a device or not, to be honest with you, I think.
I agree with that.
I mean, that's just kind of my thinking. But the last thing I want to mention about the event, didn't actually happen at the event. It happened in some documentation. After the event that got posted, one of this one guy that manages a Mac network that I like, his name is Bradley Chambers. He started writing for 9to5 Mac, and I think his first article called Making the Grade, well, it's a series that he's writing now called Making the Grade. I think the first article he wrote was it, and it really kind of resonated. Before I get into that, they did give iCloud storage for students 200 gigs free instead of 5 gigs free.
Yes, that was my favorite announcement of the whole day.
But you know what? Why can't I have 200 gigs for free?
You can. You can pay for it.
Yeah, and so that's basically what I did. And so it still didn't compete with Apple storage. I mean, Google storage. I mean, they give you unlimited, I mean, which comes up to
what? Unlimited with a drive letter now.
Yeah, and so that's great. But one of the thing that Bradley Chambers wrote about was that a lot of schools, whether they're Apple, Chromebook, Microsoft, whatever, well, maybe not so much Microsoft, but it's like Apple or Google, they're getting an iPad. The first thing that they're going to do is they're going to log into their G Suite account on that device, no matter whether it's a Chromebook or an iPad. And so Bradley was basically saying that Apple is missing an opportunity. They want to say that they're all in on education, but they're making it hard. And these are his words, and I thought it was really good. He said they want to show that they're all in education, but they're making it hard for education to be all in on Apple because they're not providing like identity ownership or identity management in like iCloud, using iCloud like you would G Suite. And so, but what they announced, they put in like some documentation that you're going to be able to sync your Apple School Manager with your Google Cloud users, like your G Suite account, GC directory, sorry, that's what I'm thinking of. So you'll basically be able to sync iCloud accounts and Apple IDs, managed Apple IDs, with the G Suite directory. And so it'll make it easier to create those identities in your managed Apple IDs, even though you still won't get mail, calendar, contacts. Well, I think you might get some of those. No, maybe not even any of those things, to be honest with you. But you'll get like the 200 gigs iCloud storage and the ability to do like shared iPads and stuff like that with the managed Apple IDs. And so to me, that's Apple basically saying where they're going to be with identity management is we're just going to piggyback on somebody else.
Well, you know, and I'm okay with that. I mean, because Apple's not providing email hosting to any school's private domains that they own.
And you know what? Come to think of it, I mean, coming from a company that provided email hosting for people, I don't blame them on that 100%.
I don't blame them at all. That was dismal.
That was a nightmare. I get where Bradley's coming from. It's like, I really liked what he said about not being able to go all in on Apple because there's that one piece that Google provides that Apple doesn't. And I think it'd be good if they did. But
yeah, and I think it's a good move from Apple because if Apple was to get into it right now, they wouldn't be able to do it as well as either Microsoft or Google.
No, and I think the way they're piggybacking off of Google and G Suite, I think it's a great idea. And in fact, Jamf actually, I don't even know if it's an Apple thing or if it's a Jamf thing, but Jamf makes it really easy to configure Google accounts on an iPad for deployment. I mean, it pretty much like it sets up everything, and all the user has to do is basically type in their email address and password. I mean, which is really all I have to do anyway. But I mean, it like creates it starts the account creation for them on the device already. And so I don't know if that's like if that's a Jamf thing or if that's an Apple thing. But you know, since Apple's running on Google Cloud platform now, I mean, maybe there's some new partnerships coming down the line. Maybe this is a significant thing that this synchronization between managed Apple IDs and G Suite directory. Maybe it's a lot bigger than just syncing accounts. Maybe it's iCloud running on G Suite. I mean, I don't know.
You know, maybe the reason they moved into those Google hosting environments is to get the lower latency to Google apps. I mean, they're already in the infrastructure.
I mean, yeah, since like Bradley said, I mean, the first thing that they do is they log into their G Suite account or they log into their Microsoft 365 account on those Apple devices. I mean,
does anyone actually do that one?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I doubt it, but
like, maybe two people.
Maybe your iPhone, you log in Office 365 is the first thing you do with it, since Microsoft really doesn't provide a mobile platform anymore, fire sale of the pallets of Lumia devices they find in the back cabinet somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, no kidding. What was it? Lumia 640s came back in stock on Amazon. It was like, why is this a thing?
Was that the $30 still here? $30 one?
Well, that was the one I had gotten for $30, but they were selling for $150.
Oh, geez. I think I have a 640 that I got for $30 from Best Buy. It was like a AT&T Go phone or something like that.
Yeah, they were Go phones in the end. And it was just like, oh, my.
But
oh
it's
my.
Just crazy. But, I mean, overall, I think it was a pretty a lot of the Apple focused podcasts that I would listen to, there's like, well, were you overwhelmed, underwhelmed, or just whelmed? Well, I was just kind of whelmed. I mean, it is what it is. It was an education event. No, to be completely honest with you, working in education and considering this was an education event, I was a little bit underwhelmed, to be honest with you. I think they really left a lot on the table that they could have done that they didn't do. But what they did do, I'll give them credit for. It was really good. The iPad is a really good iPad. I would recommend that iPad to anybody. I mean, because it's a really good device. I mean, people that like iPads. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't recommend it to you because you'd probably punch me in the throat. But
no, we are over webcam, so I don't think I could do that.
But next time you see me, you'd probably be like, throat chop. That's for recommending the iPad.
What was that for?
But I mean, I'd recommend it to anybody, and it's a great device. And the curriculum that they're coming up with, I think it's great. I think it's a great way for schools to get their foot in the door to get into programming curriculum and fine arts curriculum. I'll kind of end the Apple talk on this. In 2012, Steve Jobs, I think, was he alive then? No, this might have been before 2012. Steve Jobs at one point did a presentation, or maybe it wasn't Steve Jobs, but Apple put up a presentation at one of their education events where they're basically saying that Apple is like at the intersection of education and liberal arts or something like that. And so like they kind of like brought that, and it was like a street sign, like an intersection sign, like you would see on the top of a stop sign. And so it kind of really, it was at the crossroads or something like that. The imagery that they used, this time when they made that statement, it was like one sign that was like that had, it looked like arrows is what it was. And so basically it was saying, it was like liberal arts this way, education is this way. And that's kind of what I kind of feel Apple has kind of been like for a while. It's like we're caring more about the consumer and not so much about education, or we're caring more about these shot on iPhone commercials that they're doing on Instagram and stuff, as opposed to what can we do for education. And so I don't know if it's so much a crossroads right now as it should be, or an intersection, as is like one side of town is education and one side of town is liberal arts. But it's getting closer, I think. I think they did make some pretty good improvements to some of the products they did have. I was just a little disappointed that they could have did more than what they did with what they got. I mean, Apple is like, Apple can do so much. I mean, I'm not a shareholder. I mean, I'm not one that Apple has to cater to. I mean, publicly traded company, I mean, their shareholders are their number one priority. Let's just be honest. So, I mean, they have all the money in the world that they could do whatever they want to with. And so I just think they could do more in education than what they're doing. I mean, if they wanted to, they could uproot. I mean, they literally have the funds. They can uproot every Chromebook device out there, really, if they wanted to. They can make it appealing for everybody to switch from Chromebook to iPad. They can make it worthwhile, I think, if they really, really wanted to.
Almost everyone.
Yeah, almost everyone, except for Buena, Texas. Buena, Texas will not switch to Apple products. But
no.
But I think they can. I think they can make a compelling case for you, though. They can make you consider it. But I just don't think. I don't know if the desire of them, they want to do that. I think it's almost like they only want to cater to a certain market or a certain demographic of people. And so I just don't know how I really feel about that. I mean, it is what it is at this point, I guess. But all in all, I guess I expected more than what I got, and so my expectations were too high.
There were always things that I wanted to come out of it, but I generally don't ever get anything that I want to come out of it from Apple.
They announced new watch bands the day before, so I mean, hey.
Oh, sweet.
For the Apple Watch you don't have.
I wonder if I could put that on my gear.
Apple Watch bands, maybe so. You might could find somebody that makes a third party connector. They call them lugs, I think, for Apple Watch bands.
I guarantee it exists on Alibaba.
Probably. What does it exist on Alibaba?
This is true.
But that's our show this week. We just kind of wanted to talk about why I was disappointed with the Apple event that I didn't even end up watching. I just sort of read the live blogs about. But if you have any feedback you want to send to us, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at @TwistOfMatt. Chris is at @Feeks. You can reach out to the show account at Educating Tech. Send us an email at educatingtech@gmail.com if you want to reach out that way. For show notes and links, the whole two that we have in our show document, the link to the new iPad and the link to the actual video if you actually want to read or read, see the event. I'll throw
Turn on closed captioning if you want to read it.
Yeah, I'll actually throw in like some links to the Verge's live blog too. I love the Verge's live blogging because you can really tell that I like the Verge because, and I like the Mac blogs like 9to5 Mac and iMore and stuff like that. I like them too, but the Verge is not Apple centered, and so you have some more. It's almost like you have people on the Verge that don't drink the Apple Kool-Aid all the way. It's kind of like watered down Kool-Aid, I guess, in a way. And so it's, and he's one of the ones, like when I was reading the live blog, they're the ones that kind of pointed out those comments that we started talking about today. It's like, where do they get off saying these things? Or that's the first shot to Chrome OS. And so it's like they get kind of snarky when it comes to things. And then they made some like wrestling references too. And so we all know I like wrestling. so it was kind of fun to read their live blogs. But I'll throw the link to that in there too. But yeah, just reach out to us if you have any thoughts on the Apple event or anything about that. And that's it. I'll see you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.